This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290 online, TSN1290.ca. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show our good friend from the Record newspaper in New Jersey. He covers the New York Rangers, Andrew Gross. Andrew, good afternoon, and thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. How have you been?
We're doing very well. How about yourself? In the midst of Super Bowl week and a couple stadium games in the last 6 days, I bet it's been a busy week for you.
Yeah, it seems like it's just going to get busier now since they threw this out about wanting Ryan Callahan's situation resolved over the next 6 days or so.
Well, that's a perfect segue leading us right into our first question. They said exactly right that they want Callahan to be resolved by next Friday when the NHL trade freeze takes effect because of the Olympics. First question, do you think that Ryan Callahan will end up playing the two games this week for the New York Rangers?
I think they're sort of 50-50 right now. If he's here, they're going to use him, I believe. Coach Alain Vigneault was asked about that today specifically, whether he expects to have Callahan in the lineup Tuesday against the Avalanche, and he said he's an optimistic person by nature, and yes, he expects Cali to be in his lineup, and, you know, having been through it, a down-to-the-wire contract negotiation before when he was with the Canucks. He said in his third year, you know, the Sedin twins didn't get signed until June 30th over in Sweden. So he says he's an optimistic person, and, you know, right now he still thinks Cali will remain with the Rangers. But you know what? If Cali doesn't budge on 7 years, which I don't see him wanting to budge on that, it may be really tough for him to be back with the Rangers or be here past the pre-Olympic break trade deadline on Friday at 3 p.m.
Yeah, that was going to be my question, Andrew. Apparently, Callahan's asking for 7 years, 42, or 7 years at least, as you mentioned, and the Rangers are at 5 years for 30. Who do you think blinks first?
I'll be honest. I don't see Cali blinking. It would seem like an easy fix, right? You know, just compromise at 6 years and call it a day. Because I think both sides are fine on the salary cap figure of $6 million a year. I think the Rangers would do that. So it would seem to be an easy compromise, say 6 years at $36 million. Cali and his camp are pretty adamant that this guy has, for what he's done for this franchise, he deserves to get what he wants, and he wants a 7-year deal. And also, if you go back the last time when Cali did sign this 3-year deal, that was the same summer that Brandon Dubinsky was up for a deal, and the Rangers kind of prioritized Dubinsky at that point. They gave Dubé 4 years and wound up giving Cali three, right around the same money but Cali's camp didn't like the fact. They were a little off-put, a little incredulous at the fact that the Rangers seemed to put a little more emphasis on getting Dubinsky done, given what Cali brings to the team. And I still think after that they're not willing to compromise this time around.
So, Andrew, Callahan's asking for 7 years and $42 million. In your opinion, based on his production and the type of player that he is that asking for a lot?
Oh, yeah, it's asking for a lot, but if you look at some of the contracts that are out there, you know, if you look at maybe David Clarkson as a comparable, you know what? I mean, Callie's not wrong for asking what he's getting, and certainly for the sacrifices and what he's done and what he's meant to this franchise, I don't think he's asking for anything outrageous. I just think he's asking for something that the Rangers are not comfortable doing. And the reason, you know, it's sort of Kelly's fault, the way he plays. He's always in harm's way, and you have to worry or at least if you're the Rangers, you have to wonder about what kind of production you're getting from Callahan maybe the last 2-3 years of a 7-year deal, and which is why I know the Rangers don't want to go that long, because they're probably figuring they'll be paying, you know, $6 million against the cap for, you know, trying to be like dead space at that point if it goes the way a lot of people do think Callahan's career will do, where his productivity and his ability to play at this level, you know, may not go past his age 33, 34 season, and he turns 29 in March.
Yeah, I understand the loyalty, Andrew, and obviously there's a certain value in that organizationally and principally, all that stuff. How much, though, are we talking about what Ryan Callahan has done when talking about this contract as opposed to what he will do?
Well, yeah, I mean, and that's where, you know, Glenn Sather and his staff, you know, have to, you know, think about how much you negotiate with your heart and how much you kind of negotiate in a heartless way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in a very cutthroat, you know, business-only way, because there's no doubt that Ryan Callahan has meant everything to this franchise, certainly in the 3 years he's been captain, and even going, you know, beyond that. The Rangers have something called the Stephen McDowell Extra Effort Award. It's named after that cop who was shot paralyzed, and he comes out in the last home game of the season and presents this Extra Effort Award. And you know what, Cali, on a regular basis, he's won 5 of the last 6 years. And, wow. You know, I know it's just a team award, but it really speaks to what the perception of Cali is around here. He is, it's a cliche, but he really is their heart and soul. And it's not like just trading another player who's in a contract situation. It's really about trading, other than Henrik Lundqvist, you know, or maybe Ryan McDonough at this point, you're really trading kind of the face of the franchise if you get rid of Cali. And that's something that's really tough. But, you asked me about blinking before, and, you know, Glenn Sather has been at this a long, long time. And, you know, maybe he blinks to 6 seasons, but I just don't see him blinking to 7 seasons.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. We're joined by Andrew Gross, who covers the New York Rangers for the Record newspaper in Bergen, New Jersey. Andrew, the name that we've heard coming back in return for Ryan Callahan, if they decide to go the trade route, is St. Louis Blues forward Chris Stewart. And then we've heard talk about Stewart and Paul Stastny being reunited in New York next season, with the Rangers signing Stastny as an unrestricted free agent. You know, what's the infatuation with Chris Stewart and Paul Stastny in the Rangers organization?
Well, I think in Stastny, you can never have too many good skating, you know, offensively productive forwards, especially with the way Elaine Vigneault wants to play. And, you know, Stastny's certainly proven in Colorado that that's the type of player he is. And I think he's going to be, you know, it's not just the Rangers. I mean, you say, oh, the Rangers are going to go out and sign him as a UFA. I mean, a lot of teams are going to be looking at Paul if he gets to the open market. And I'm sure the Avalanche, you know, would like to re-sign him as well. It's a great plan, you know, getting Stewart back to with him, because I believe that's when Stewart was at his most productive. You know, Chris Stewart is a nice player. He has not, I don't think he's ever really lived up to what we thought he might be after his second year with the Avalanche in terms of offensive production, but he's a steady player who can give you offensive production. So, you know, if you're going to get rid of Callahan, you need to bring a useful piece back. And the market is a little bit hindered because Callahan's going out as a rental, and, you know, there's no guarantee that if the Blues acquire him, that's going to be where he stays for the next six, seven years. And that's why the Rangers have kind of granted his agent permission to go out there and, you know, see what the market is right now. And, you know, we haven't heard exactly which the teams that the Rangers have allowed Steve Bartlett to talk to, but you got to think that the Blues are one of those teams. And, also, Cali is a Rochester, New York guy, and it's long been speculated that the Sabres would make a big push for him as a unrestricted free agent, because he, you know, he would certainly be a huge fan draw if he ever went back home up to the Buffalo region.
Andrew, would this be any different? Would this turn out any differently if John Tortorella was still the coach of the New York Rangers, not Alain Vigneault?
I don't know if it would turn out differently. I certainly know, you know, AV has certainly gone on and on in the last couple of days about what a big fan he is of Ryan Callahan. But, I mean, you speak to the point that Ryan Callahan's game and his reckless abandon and blocking shots and his forechecking and his physical edge, you know, he had a bigger role under John Tortorella, you know, since he's been hurt. And, you know, he's gone through three injury absences already this season. And when he came back from the sprained MCL the last time, you know, he has not gone back to spot on the power play. And a lot of Ryan Callahan's goals and offensive production came from the man advantage. So that's why you see his offensive production down. There's no doubt that his role is reduced under Alain Vigneault, but that doesn't mean that Alain Vigneault is not, you know, in Clint Sather's ear saying this is a fantastic player who means a lot to the team. It's just that Alain Vigneault uses Cali in a different role and in a diminished role from what John Tortorella used to be.
Andrew, as you're very well aware, Dan Girardi is also UFA, a defenseman that I think everybody in this room really likes. As far as Girardi goes, is there any update on that contract status, or are they waiting until they deal with Ryan Callahan before they start progressing with those talks?
Well, I mean, the talks with Girardi have certainly progressed, and I think they're further along than they are with Ryan Callahan, and it sounds like they've sort of, there's a good area for compromise, and there's, you know, there's a really good foundation for getting a deal done with Dan. I just think they're going to wait and resolve this Ryan Callahan situation first. And you know what? It wouldn't shock me that, you know, whatever happens with Cali, you know, and right now, you know, a trade being traded is certainly a very, very strong possibility that once that's resolved, Girardi gets done pretty quickly after that, and it might mean that, you know, that gets done after the Olympic break, but I don't think you go much past the Olympic break early into March before you get a deal done with Girardi if Callahan is traded away.
Yeah, it's interesting to see the way they're in the same contractual situation, but they're being dealt with differently. Is the drama just based on the contract demands of Steve Bartlett?
Well, I think the seven-year term is certainly a deal-breaker at this point, and that's why you're in the situation you are with Ryan Callahan. And it sounds like maybe you might be able to get Girardi, who is a year older, you might be able to get Girardi on a six-year deal, which I think, you know, like with Callahan, the Rangers might do six with Cali. I have a strong feeling they would do six with Dan Girardi.
As far as Dan Girardi versus Ryan Callahan in the trade market goes, Andrew, who do you think maybe gets a better return for the Rangers?
You know, there are not many all-star caliber right-handed shot defensemen who come on the trade market like Dan Girardi might, you know, and that's a hypothetical because I think the Rangers think they're going to be able to get Dan Girardi done, but say, you know, say Callahan signs and then, you know, they hit a stumbling block with Girardi. They have more time with Girardi, I think, in their minds because they can go to the March 5th deadline, the real trade deadline with Dan Girardi, given that he's, you know, he's not headed over to Sochi. You know, a lot of the push with Callahan is the fact that he is, you know, going to the Olympics, and the Rangers can't risk him getting injured and then getting nothing for him if he walks away as an unrestricted free agent. So I think they feel like they have, another month to work on Dan Girardi. But, boy, if Dan Girardi ever came on the trade market, you know, there are a lot of, you know, contenders who, you know, you're always looking for defensemen and you're always looking for right-handed defensemen too. They're not as you know, not as many of them out there. So I think, you know, you're talking about what you bring back. Dan Girardi might bring you back more, but I don't think the Rangers are at the point where they're contemplating Dan Girardi yet.
Final question for you, Andrew. I always find it interesting that, you know, Glenn Sather kind of takes on these contract situations, and maybe it's more old school in the negotiation way, you know, style than some other GMs. I think he's done a really nice job in RFA negotiations, and you look at the Ryan McDonagh contract. I mean, that's going to look like a steal, you know, for the future. Is this Glenn Sather negotiating these, or how much of a factor is Jeff Gorton in terms of involvement in these negotiations?
Oh, I think it's Jeff Gorton is, he's got his fingerprints all over these negotiations. Now, you know, I sort of think he does the daily grunt work in this, and then Glenn Sather sets the tone for it.
Okay.
That's kind of how I see them working here. So, you know, you say Glenn, you kind of mean Jeff, but you can't discount, you know, Glenn's involvement in this. And like I said earlier, he's been through a lot of these. And what he does, you mentioned the RFAs and, you know, certainly what he got done with Ryan McDonagh, which I agree is a great contract for the Rangers. You know what? Glenn is very good at holding the line. He doesn't lowball the RFAs at the start. He pretty much gives them, you know, what the Rangers' best offer is, and it's a good offer. And then, you know, he pretty much lets them, the player or the RFA and the agent, think about it all summer. And you saw what happened with Derek Stepan.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
The Rangers came up on money, but they didn't come up a huge amount on money. So, you know, Glenn is very good at holding the line and being honest with these guys. Like, this is what you are going to get with us. And, you know, you can kick and scream and you can, you know, go out elsewhere. I mean, Glenn's got, specifically speaking about RFAs, I mean, Glenn's got the security of knowing that pretty much no one's offering a, you know, an offer sheet there.
Uh-huh.
So he can toe the line. But it's a little different with UFAs because there is the light at the end of the tunnel where they can say, well, you know what, I will test the market. So it's a little bit different ball game, but I think Clay approaches it pretty much the same, that he'll give you his best offer, he'll tell you what the Rangers are willing to do, and he's not BSing you. And, you know, it's not about him blinking a lot of the times.
Andrew, we lied. We actually have one more question for you. I was following you on Twitter today, and you mentioned that the Rangers actually had a unique practice. They were playing some ice football. I guess the question for me is, do you think Dan Girardi has a future as a receiver? Is Brian Boyle as good of a quarterback as you say, and Henrik Lundqvist, does he have a future as an offensive lineman?
Lundqvist was good for just about snapping the ball, and I got to be honest with you, there were a couple of times where it looked like Hank was a little confused which guy to snap the ball to. So, you know, unless Hank was trying to block the other goalie, pretty much Hank snapped the ball and got out of the way, because, I mean, it was all fun and games, but boy, can you imagine the repercussions if Hank had gotten hurt playing football?
Yeah.
So, you know, Derek Stepan was joking later on that, you know, Hank really was in that center linebacker role, but he wanted a bigger role, but no one was willing to give it to him. I asked Dan about the pass that went right through his hands, and he made some excuse about eating a lot of popcorn, buttered popcorn, right before going out and playing football. And you know what? The big guy, Boiler, 6'7", He stood tall in the pocket. He could see over the line, which was Hank, and he looked good. He even, rolled out, skated out to his right, bought himself some time, found the receiver. Nice bomb to Anton Strahlman, who spiked it over the net. You know what? It was fun to watch. I mean, it was boys just having a lot of fun. And, assistant coach Scott Arneal was given the credit for coming up with it. You know, the Rangers don't play again until Tuesday. And, Vigneault came in this morning and said to his staff, what can we do to kind of, lighten up the mood here at the beginning of the, practice? Because, you know what, no matter what they say, when your captain's on the trade block, it can create tensions, no matter how much, you know, the players are saying that they don't pay attention to trade rumors. This is not your normal trade rumor. Uh-huh. This is your captain. It's like pulling that one thread out that's going to unravel the whole sweater. I mean, that's, you know, you can kind of look at it like that. So I think the players, whether they admit it or not, are a little bit uptight about the fact that if Cali might be leaving the Rangers, and ice football was a great way to lighten the mood today, and I think it worked wonders for the team.
I just assume there wasn't a Richard Sherman incident after the game.
No. I mean, the guys love trash talking. They love trash talking, and there was some griping from the white team about the fact that all the tall guys, Nash and Boyle, were on one team, you know, and you got Matt Zuccarello on the other team. No Richard Sherman incidents and no injuries, which was the most important thing. They played about 15 minutes. I'm sure you can go find video. I think the team's website is going to have some video up on the game. So it was certainly fun. Alain Vigneault said he never did anything like that in Vancouver or Montreal. He did some other he's mentioned something about baseball and sticks upside down or something like that. But he said this was his first experience with football, and he said it, you know, came at the perfect time because, you know what, the Super Bowl's been all the talk in New York this week.
Andrew Gross covers the New York Rangers for the Record newspaper in New Jersey. Andrew, thanks as always for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Anytime. You guys have a great day, and enjoy the game tomorrow.
You too, Andrew. Thanks very much. Let's go to break. You're listening to TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on tsn1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thank you to Andrew Gross for joining us to talk about the New York Rangers and the saga surrounding Ryan Callahan and his future with the Rangers. Went a little bit long with Andrew, so we'll do this one. This will be a bit of a quicker segment. We're going to stay in the New York, New Jersey area. Of course, it's perfectly fitting with the Super Bowl being tomorrow, a game you can hear live on TSN 1290. Right after our Jets-Habs coverage comes to an end. That gets underway 9 a.m. tomorrow with Hustler and Lawless. Gary and myself will be filling in as, of course, Maddie and Andrew are in New York for the Super Bowl. And then Rick Ralph, 11 o'clock, puck drop 12 noon tomorrow here on TSN 1290. But Marty Brodeur was asked if he thinks it's conceivable that Devils general manager Lou Lamoriello will ask him to waive his no-trade clause. Can you foresee a situation where Marty Brodeur doesn't end this year as a New Jersey Devil?
This is news to me, and really, Marty's played pretty well. I know that he had a rough time in the Winter Classic there, and he was complaining about the ice conditions, and the ice wasn't very good. But as far as, you know, Marty Brodeur ending up on another team, that would have to mean, Richie, that the team thinks that they have another shot. To me, I'm not sure really what the purpose is, because the Devils right now are competing for a playoff spot, and Corey Schneider is playing the best hockey of his season right now, and he's going to get the majority of the starts going forward. So I'm not sure why they would move Marty Brodeur, especially in the thick of a playoff race, because they don't have a goaltender in the system right now that can replace Marty Brodeur as a backup. So to me, it's a little bit suspect, and to me, it's almost like this has been a little bit blown out of proportion. I think someone asked him, and he said, yeah, I guess if they're going to trade me, depending on what team it is. And you'd have to think that list of teams is very small. But would I be shocked if it happened? I would be shocked if it was going to happen, because this is arguably Marty Brodeur's last couple of years. So especially when you're considering that they're in the thick of a playoff race, as I said, I don't really know why they would move him. But
this is the first, this is not the first time he's brought this up. So I wouldn't be shocked. He says in the article, Tom Giolitti article, that he's of the NorthJersey.com, he's not asking for a trade, but he didn't say he wouldn't if it got worse. I wouldn't be shocked if he got dealt, but it still would be weird to see him in a different jersey. Schneider's a goalie now, for all intents and purposes, and he wants to play. But the question is there anywhere he can play? And Kevin McGrath and the Toronto Star wrote about, is there anywhere he can play? Like, does he go to Pittsburgh and with Fleury, St. Louis an option? I mean, you know, Kevin McGrath talks about cap-wise they can make it happen, but is he an upgrade on Halak? No. So is there anywhere he can go he's an upgrade? He's not. He's one of the best goalies ever, but he's, you know, he's over 40 now.
Yeah, but so. The timing, they're 1 point out of a playoff spot, so why would you trade him now, and why would he want to be traded now?
Yeah, that's fair.
If the Devils are going to, and we saw a few years ago, the Devils went all the way to the Cup Finals against the Kings, so, and again, his motivation isn't to win a Stanley Cup right now. As if the, you know, because he's won them. Sure, he's only going to go to the team.
He wants to play.
He wants to play.
And where can he play?
It'll be an interesting situation to monitor, and we will monitor it as we get closer to the NHL's trade deadline. When we come back, we're going to look at 10 guys who might be on the market and potential destinations for them. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 1 hour to go on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
2 hours down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, online at TSN1290.ca. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. This segment of the program is brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, wearing a proper fitting, custom-made mouth guard designed for you by Dr. Les Rikus and the Linden Market Dental Center, it's an essential part of your protective equipment. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center 204-487-2226 or visit them online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. Gentlemen, a good friend of this program is Kevin Allen of USA Today. He came out with an article earlier yesterday, I believe, late yesterday, so it would have appeared in the USA Today newspapers today, looking at 10 candidates that could be on the trade market as pure rentals during this upcoming trade deadline. I think he was more looking at the trade deadline on March 5th as opposed to the roster freeze that's upcoming on Friday. But, you know, whatever. These are the 10 names of guys who are potentially available. The first two names we've already dealt with in detail today. That's Dan Girardi and Ryan Callahan. Pardon me, of the New York Rangers.
You're right there, Drew?
I'm choking, but aside from that, I'll be fine. The next guy,
have some of that nest tea.
Yeah, thank you. The next guy he mentions from the Buffalo Sabres is Steve Ott. Yeah. I'm going to let you guys take this while I go over here and choke for a minute.
Well, I mean, with Steve Ott, Drew, you know what you're getting, and you're getting an agitator. You're getting a guy who can play wing and play center. He's going to be able to add a little bit of a modest offensive touch as well. You know, maybe it's 10 goals over the course of a year, 10 to 15 goals. This year he's already got 8 goals. Teams who want to add a guy like Steve Ott, and you've heard Vancouver in the past for the kind of that quote-unquote sandpaper element, Ezzy, that teams are seeking. You wonder if a team like San Jose, for example, wants to improve depth lines, wants to make sure that there's some guys on their squad, you know, with injuries and such that they have to deal with, maybe they look that way. A guy like him is always most appealing, as it seems like, at the trade deadline. You know, you don't really hear much about guys like Steve Ott, and maybe you don't hear much about him as you did years ago. You don't hear much about guys like him until the deadline, and everybody's going to the playoffs, and they want a guy who is, you know, 30 years old, has experience in the playoffs with Dallas and can contribute a little bit. You know, he's not going to be a game breaker, but if you need depth, then he's the kind of guy you're looking for, and he won't cost you too much.
Is he the kind of guy you would acquire to sort of, you know, if you have a hole on your third line or on your fourth line, and you think you're a real deep cup contender, Steve Ott's the kind of guy you might be circling as a potential guy to acquire?
Yeah, absolutely. Look at what Brian Bickle did for the Chicago Blackhawks last year, and that's what Richie's getting at. And Steve Ott is a player that I imagine will have a lot of teams. A lot of teams will be calling the Buffalo Sabres on Steve Ott because of the fact that, you know, he's a guy that'll go into the corners, he can drop the gloves, and he can score. And you know, he's not a 30 goal scorer, but he's a guy that can score the odd goals, and he's one of those guys that in the playoffs those guys end up being the heroes. And you know, it's unfortunate for Steve Ott because he was named the co-captain this year along with Thomas Vanek, But, you know, where the Buffalo Sabres are at right now, they would probably love to move him or at least entertain the fact of moving him if they can get a high draft pick.
And that's a couple of keys to note. He makes $2.9 million a year cap hit, and he's a pending UFA. So compensation will need to be guarded accordingly. Another thing to note is that Paul Gostad, he right now odds winning faceoffs at 51%, but he's been a good faceoff guy in his career. If you look at what they got for Gostad.
Nashville.
Yeah, they got a first-round pick. Now, they held out, and got a first-round pick. Now, Gostad is a different player than Ott, and he's bigger, and he can match up in different situations. But, I mean, you're going to get at least a second for him, because of what he can do versatility-wise.
All of these guys that we're talking about right now are pure rentals. They're unrestricted at the end of this season. Next guy on this list, also a Buffalo Sabre. This is a guy I think any team that's in need of scoring is going to be looking at. That's Matt Molson of the Sabres.
Yeah, but they apparently want a first and a prospect for Matt Molson, so that changes the asking price. And Matt Molson's a goal scorer, as he knows that. I mean, this guy... was, many people thought, a product of John Tavares, and he's gone into Buffalo and still produced. And he's a bigger body. You hear Los Angeles, because LA, you know, Drew, he's 6'1", 200 pounds. He's 30 years old. He's been in the LA system before, so they know what they're getting. Obviously, they let him go. They could plug him into a top two line, and he can fit into what they do. Big body, puts and is able to score, whereas, you know, some of the other guys they have may not be as familiar with their surroundings. And the other thing to note is the scoring element that LA lacks. I mean, you look at LA this year and you see how much talent they have, but some of that talent hasn't been producing offensively, so they can score. If Molson can score naturally, then he can make them more dangerous. If you remember when they added Jeff Carter in the Cup year, they couldn't score that year either.
Right.
And his addition, not only the fact that he was able to produce, but the guys he was able to help produce, made them more dangerous. And if Matt Molson makes Kopitar or Mike Richards more dangerous, then maybe he ups their goal production. And they can afford to trade younger guys. I mean, look at what the Kings have, right? They have guys like Tyler Toffoli who are young up-and-comers who are good players, but if they want to win now, which they may, and they probably do, they could be expendable, and it could be something that's appealing for Buffalo. Buffalo would like to get players back who are younger. I mean, draft picks are nice, but they have draft picks right now. They want to be able to, and they have some guys in the system. We've talked about it before, right? Some of the younger guys, Ristolainen and Grigorenko.
Gergensen's
as well. So there are guys here. I mean, if you could get a guy who's a little more ready to go in the AHL, that'd be great.
Yeah, to me, St. Louis is another fit there because St. Louis, as we talked about,
unless
Alex Steen is producing at that level, that crazy level that Alex Steen was producing at earlier, they probably would like to get another game breaker.
Right.
Matt Molson's a game breaker. He's a pure sniper. And I think there's also the possibility, which would be really odd, that he goes back to the Islanders and signs, but they traded him when we were really scratching our heads and trying to figure that out because him and Tavares arguably form one of the best connection combos in the entire NHL. So that's a possibility. But I think him getting moved for, as you mentioned, Richie, a roster player, plus a high draft pick. Because Matt Molson is a perennial 30-goal guy, high 30-goal guy.
Yep.
So, and those do not come up very often. And the Buffalo Sabres right now, I mean, we're hearing rumors that, you know, we talk about the Blues as far as a possible destination for Molson. Apparently they're pretty interested in Ryan Miller as well because they're looking at their goaltending situation and they're struggling with Elliott and Halak there, which I didn't foresee coming because they were pretty darn good the last couple of years. So also another guy in Miller that might end up on a team like the Blues, who again right now they're looking at the playoffs and they're saying, okay, well we're gonna have to knock off the Hawks again. And the Ducks have gotten better, and their goaltending is really good. So they're looking at all of these different players, and they're saying, okay, we might have to make a move here because we're not quite at that level that we can go up in a best-of-seven series and beat one of these teams.
Another team to watch is Ottawa because their top line has really been Turris, MacArthur, and Ryan. Jason Spezza getting going a little bit here, but wouldn't Jason Spezza like to have a guy like Matty Molson playing beside him?
Sure, guy who fits
a guy who can shoot, and Heatley was a guy who succeeded with Spezza, the left-handed shot, guy who can really get the puck and really rip it, and Spezza's a great passer. That seems to make sense.
Another guy speculated on by Kevin Allen of USA Today is Brad Boyes of the Florida Panthers.
I mean, Brad Boyes is a bigger body. He's not going to play a big man's game, and not a great skater. He's great in the shootout. It doesn't matter in the playoffs, but it may matter for a team trying to make the playoffs, which Florida kind of is. And he's got a good shot. I mean, I don't see Brad Boyes making the difference for anybody really here. I'm surprised to see his name included, frankly. I mean, it's also surprising the way he's performed to an extent, but it's a great low-cost, high upside deal for Florida this offseason, and if they can get anything for him, it's a great move by them.
Thomas Vanek, he's the guy that we've spoken about, he's been talked about all year, and that he's really been involved in the only significant trade in the NHL this season, going from Buffalo to the Islanders. You know, he's on UFA, there's all sorts of talk about him. What do you see happening with Thomas Vanek?
If they made that move and they're going to move Thomas Vanek, why did they make that move? That's what we said. What we said the whole time.
I agree.
Because they gave up the draft picks. So if you trade Thomas Vanek, you better make sure that you're recouping those draft picks and you're getting something. You know, Richie mentioned what you could possibly get for Steve Ott. Well, Thomas Vanek, a team like the Vancouver Canucks are gushing right now at the chance of getting Thomas Vanek. Again, we didn't mention a guy like Camilleri, but these players, Camilleri, Vanek, you throw those guys onto your team and you're willing to give up a roster player. So, you know, there's probably a bunch of teams that would be interested in Thomas Vanek, and you know, is that move that you're going to make, is that for the short term or the long term? And in the Islanders' case, it's absolutely for the long term, because this season's been a disaster and they have to get a goaltender there. So there's a good chance he is moved, but again, I just wonder why they had to move Molson to get Vanek if the whole plan was to move him in the first place.
They're trying to sign him right now, but he's not biting, and if he doesn't sign by the deadline, they have to deal him. And again, as he's right, that trade didn't make much sense. Didn't make much sense then, and it's never good when it never makes much sense. A few months later, Kevin Allen mentions the Los Angeles Kings. Minnesota, he also mentions, and that's been a place Elliot Friedman's discussed about. You know, Vanek went to University of Minnesota. Played in the USHL, I think, in South Dakota there, or right around that area. He has a home there. Does it seem like it's a matter of time before he goes there to join Koivu, to join Parise, Suter? It's a hell of a quartet right there. So that's a possibility, and I think that needs to be taken into account when you're looking at like a team like Vancouver. Sure, they'd love to have a guy like that, but can they mortgage the future for a rental? If his agent would negotiate a long-term extension, if not with the Islanders, then with a prospective trade partner, that changes the market considerably.
Sure.
But if it's not going to be the case, which it doesn't appear that it will be right now, if the Islanders make back what they gave up with Molson, that might be an okay deal. The problem is, if you had just kept Molson and traded him, you would have had that and something else.
Last one before we go to break, Alex Hemsky of the Edmonton Oilers.
I mean, his name has more value, as he doesn't it, than his play. I mean, he's a good passer. He's soft. He never shoots. All those things. Is there a team that really needs Alex Hemsky when making a playoff push? I'm not so sure there is. I've thought about it. I've looked at some of the rosters. Sure, there are teams who could help you need create offense, LA. But for example, does he fit into anything LA does?
That's a tough one.
Yeah.
Because a couple of years ago, there was a lot of interest in him. They held on to him because they didn't think they were getting enough. The asking price for Hemsky was very high, and I imagine it's going to still be high. Yeah, sure, a change of scenery is really what he needs at this point in his career, because Edmonton has had a really tough year, and he's had a really tough year. And I think you're right, Rich. I think who's the fit? Is there going to be an Eastern Conference team that wants that extra offense? I look at maybe a team like Detroit that might.
Yeah. You know,
but again, I'm just spitballing really, but you know, at this point in his career, he's not what he was, so he's not a top line player, but can you maybe put him on a third line and he adds a scoring element, or helps your power play out? I think whereas a few years ago you might have got a first round pick or something for Hemsky, I don't think you're getting that anymore.
Yeah, one other team to note again, I think San Jose would quietly like to add guys who have high skill. I know a guy Havlat hasn't really turned out. Couture apparently might be coming back in the next four games or so. That would go a long ways. But they never really seem to add those defensemen, which I think they could add one more. That would be what they need to. And a somewhat of an impactful defenseman, but they don't ever seem to do it. So watch for them to add some depth on the wings, and Hemsky can fit into that whole puck possession skating game that they like to play.
Let's go to break. When we come back, we will update you on the latest on Steven Stamkos, and we will debate his inclusion on the team going to Sochi. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
20 minutes past 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, online at TSN1290.ca. The Winter Olympics rapidly approaching. About, well, there's 1 week left of games before the NHL shuts down for the 17 days for the Sochi break. And there's one player and one name that has really been talked about more than any other player that was included on Team Canada. That's Steven Stamkos. He continues to skate on an almost daily basis with the Tampa Bay Lightning. But, you know, he is not ready yet to return to NHL game action. He says he's getting closer, but he, you know, the Lightning only have 3 more games after today's game in Montreal for him to play in prior to leaving for the Olympics. If he does not play this coming week, if he does not play a game this coming week, do you think Team Canada should still take him to Sochi and include him on the team?
That's the $64,000 question right now. And I think, Richie, when you're talking about Steven Stamkos, you're obviously talking about an elite talent that's in a class that really there are only a few players. You can throw Crosby and Tavares and maybe a handful of players in the NHL into that class. So maybe because he's that elite and he has that ability to be a game breaker, Stamkos is a guy that in a game when you need a goal, he's one of those guys along with Crosby, along with Perry, along with Jeff Carter. These players, those are your game breakers. And other players are going to play different roles on this team. Patrick Sharp and Patrick Bergeron will obviously play an offensive role, but more of a defensive role. So when you're talking about Steven Stamkos, does he have to play a game to play in the Olympics? I don't think he does. And I think you'd ideally like for him to get into game action. He's not playing for the Lightning right now against the Montreal Canadiens, obviously. But when he went down with that injury, that leg injury, when he flew into the net, the timeline was going to be tight. We knew that it was going to be around 3 months. And now we're getting around that time. And, you know, this is the issue. Is it best for Steven Stamkos to get healthy? Or is it best for him to go to the Olympics, even if he's not at 100%. I think Steve Yzerman right now is in a kind of an awkward position, Richie.
Yeah, well,
he's the GM.
He's used to that.
Well, yeah.
After the St. Louis debacle. Yeah.
But you know what I mean? He's the GM of the Lightning, GM of Team Canada right now. Yep. And he's got to say, okay, we're going over to Sochi. We're trying to win a gold medal here. But if he's not at 100%, God forbid Stamkos comes back too early and gets injured in Sochi and then misses the rest of the season. Well, the Lightning are in third place in the East right now.
Well, that's one factor. The other factor is you bring him over. He's on 100%. You have this injured guy forcing it because he's trying to play as hard as he can and obviously wants to be part of the Canadian Olympic team and isn't what he was or what he is. And the team is hurt by it. You know, it's the idea. Is 80% of Steven Stamkos better than 100% of Logan Couture if Couture's healthy or Giroux? Or St. Louis. That's a really awkward one if it's one or the other. Although we've heard that Giroux is number one on the backup list. I don't know if that's changed by the fact that Couture may play this week. I think Couture might be ahead of Giroux if that's the case. But again, we're speculating there. If Stamkos hasn't played in a National Hockey League game, it has to jump back into the Olympics. I'm still okay with it, because the prelim games mean essentially nothing. That's why I'm okay with it. And the first two games he'd be playing would be Thursday, Friday. They play Thursday. Well, they play Thursday, Friday, Sunday. I believe they play.
Yes, I think that's right.
So they play. They play back to back. What I would do,
Austria and Norway to start.
Right. That's what I mean. So what I would do is I play Stamkos Thursday. I'd give the other forward an opportunity to check in, so you get everybody involved. And then I put Stamkos back in on Sunday. And then at that point, you can see what he is. So long as he can play in the tournament. Now, he might not be up to speed, but so long as he can play in the tournament, he's coming.
Right. And Richie, you know, you talk about game action and all that. I mean,
there's an adjustment, but you drop him into a game against Finland in the Olympics.
Right.
He's not going to be able to keep up.
If anybody,
for the first little bit.
I mean, you know, professional hockey players, they can be dropped into a situation. The issue to me is...
it's 3 months off,
yeah,
and
is he, and the pace, and the fact
you're not going to play 25 minutes to get yourself in the game.
If Stamkos is at any risk of You don't want to put him in a vulnerable position.
I don't think Yzerman will, but right. I appreciate
that. And that's the issue. If you have to think that there are a lot of their doctors involved, there's the entire management team for Hockey Canada involved. Then they're going to go over every aspect of that, right? They're going to talk to the doctor, and they're going to say, is he ready to go? Are we putting him in a vulnerable situation that he could get hurt? And if that's the case, they don't take him. But if he says, I'm okay to go, and the doctor says, okay, you know what? Steven's ready to go. He might have not played in a game, but he's medically cleared to play. Then they take him.
What about the Erik Karlsson situation? Well, that's, I think, probably the most likely.
Where he comes back, but he's not the same player.
He's not the same player. Initially. And you say, oh, initially, well, I mean, it could be four or five. They could play their three games, get a bye to the quarters. It could be a six-game tournament, and he's not himself through the six games. But I think probably with his ability to shoot and things like that and find open spaces, I know he's a good skater too. So long as he can play at least 85%, I'm probably still taking him over somebody else because he also attracts attention. You know, even if you put Steven Stamkos on your power play on the offside, on the off wing, somebody's going to cheat to him. And if somebody cheats to him, you know, that means somebody else is open. And just his presence there means that much. I'm fine with it. But I wouldn't play him back-to-back. If he hasn't played a game, I would still take him. Although I'm not sure they will. But I would still take him, but I wouldn't play him back-to-back games.
Talking about awkward situations, what about Stevie Yzerman deciding that Stamkos isn't going and then not taking St. Louis as the replacement?
Well, I mean, he might as well get another job if that's the case.
I mean, I know that's the next part of the segment here. Drew, I'll take over your job. But I don't know how you don't take Marty St. Louis if Stamkos can't go. He's got to be number one. You know, you talk about Giroux and Couture. For me, it's got to be St. Louis.
See, they're such different players, though.
Absolutely.
We're talking about St. Louis over, you know, Marlowe. Again, you're talking left winger, right winger, but you're talking different styles, but similar roles on the team, probably.
Right.
Probably. I mean, you know, actually, Marlowe would very well may see some time on the PK in different situations. But
this is
the idea of the roster selections.
But
Stamkos is a game-breaking first-line player who can score 60 goals in the National Hockey League. Anybody
and
left
St. Louis,
is not.
St. Louis is the guy he plays with.
Right, I know.
So
I mean,
how do you not take him? For me, Yzerman right now, it's like, the best case scenario, Stamkos doesn't play any games and still goes to the Olympics. And worst case scenario, he can tell St. Louis, actually, Marty, you've made the team. You're going to replace Steven. If he doesn't replace him, that's just awful for St. Louis.
Just in terms of the personal relationships there, then you're on the outs with Stamkos, and you already are on the outs with St. Louis. And even if you pick him to go with St. Louis, do you ever mend the fences? I don't think that's going to happen. I think Stamkos will. Well, I think they should take him anyways. But I bet you he draws into a game before. And if he doesn't, they're going to have a difficult situation. They're going to get criticized if they take him anyways. Although I am okay with it, but they will be criticized. You watch, like they will.
Do you fly somebody else over on the plane with you to Sochi?
No, because you have an extra forward. You can dress an extra forward in a game.
Yeah,
and you can have another forward. They're going to have another forward too. So if you're going to have two extras, you don't need to fly somebody to Sochi, Russia, in case you fly him over there and he can't start the tournament. I don't think that's going to happen. If you need to call that guy, then you'll call him. But you don't have to sit him. It's not like Vancouver where Jeff Carter's waiting. This is Sochi, Russia.
We will find out in a couple weeks' time what happens, but it is something for all Team Canada fans to keep an eye on as we go forward at the Sochi Olympics. Let's go to break. When we come back, Chuck Gormley from CSN Washington is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Producer Remus takes over from producer Tim. He's on loan to us from Rick Ralph and the Rona Roundtable. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show our good friend from CSN Washington, Chuck Gormley. Chuck, good afternoon. Thanks very much for joining us on some short notice.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
Our pleasure as always, Chuck. Chuck, the Jets and the Capitals, of course, they spent the last 2 years getting very acquainted with one another, but they're going to be meeting for the second time this season, this coming Thursday. And you look at the Capitals' record, and they're sitting there in seventh place, or pardon me, in
seventh place in the Metropolitan.
In seventh place in the Metropolitan Division in the Eastern Conference. You know, nothing's going right for the team very well. I mean, Alex Ovechkin's still putting up points, but it's not translating to wins. Why is that the situation?
Well, they're making so many mistakes in the defensive end, and it's not just a defenseman, but I think that's where the problems start. They have not had Mike Green the past one game, and he's questionable for tomorrow. He actually skated today. But I think the real issue is that they've got so much inexperience on the back end. They've got really three guys that are under 25 who are trying to kind of make their way into the NHL, and it's hard to break in young defensemen, especially three of them, at the same time. So that, to me, is their biggest issue. Their goaltending has been average, maybe even below average, and I think they're hoping that by sending Philip Grubauer back to AHL Hershey that they'll address that, and they're waiting for either Braden Holtby or Michael Neuwirth to stand on his head and really steal this number one job, because it's been open all season long.
You know, Chuck, reading about the Capitals, and we don't see them obviously as much as Drew mentioned as we did in the past few seasons, but reading about it, you hear about Adam Oates, you know, he's not going to start yelling, he's not going to lose his cool, he's going to try and, you know, be constructive about the problems that the team has right now. Is his message getting through to this squad?
Apparently not, because the same mistakes are happening, and we talked to Alex Ovechkin about this today. He said, you know, they're all the same mistakes that they had this time last year. I mean, they had a great finish to last year, and in my opinion, they were probably one of the most dangerous teams heading into the playoffs. But there's a lot of holes in their game right now. There are a lot of defensive breakdowns, bad decision-making, and this team is built on generating speed from the back end and pushing the pace. And I'm seeing a lot of errant passes. A lot of that is mental. A lot of that is just concentrating and completing a pass. And that's the problem that they've had pretty much all season. So the message is the same every day. And Adam Oates will tell you that the challenge of a coach is trying to change that message so that it sinks in and the players start doing it. But I think at some point, someone has to decide whether it's the players or it's the message. If the players are doing the same thing night after night and making mistakes, maybe it's time to start changing some of the players.
You know, Chuck, with the trade roster freeze coming up, I should say, and then the trade deadline really not too far away when you consider that there won't be any moves happening during the Olympics. But where, you know, Drew mentioned the Washington Capitals right now are in 13th in the East, but right now that means you're only a couple points out of a playoff spot right now. So considering that they're still right in the thick of a playoff run here, what is George McPhee thinking right now? Is he waiting until after the Olympics to make moves? Like, is he going to wait out here and see what happens over the next few games before he makes any roster moves?
Yes, yeah, so they have four home games. They're just coming off a five-game road trip, so they have four home games this week. I'd be surprised if George McPhee made a deal this week. He's been very quiet all season long. He's had a couple players ask for trades and then not have that request honored. So my guess is that because this team is where it is, and every GM will tell you in the league that the goal is to get into the playoffs, not necessarily to win your division, just to get in. And I think that's no different here. I think if this team is hanging in there, and I suspect it will, then I don't see any major blockbuster moves, because I think GMs are afraid that if they trade away that big piece that they have, they won't get into the playoffs. And right now it's such a tight race. There's probably six teams fighting for two spots, and they're all within two or three points of each other. So I can't see this race clearing itself up anytime near the deadline, the trade deadline. So to me, a blockbuster trade is probably not likely, not only here, but throughout the league. There are only a handful of teams out of it.
Does the mediocrity in the Eastern Conference, Chuck, does that mask maybe some of these teams' deficiencies to a point that the GMs don't act on the real weaknesses of these squads?
Absolutely. I think you hit it right on the head. I think because the teams are so evenly matched, anybody can beat anybody any given night. I mean, we used to say that all the time, but it's so true. You know, the Capitals have had trouble with Buffalo. All three of their games with Buffalo have gone into overtime. So, you know, there are no easy games out there. Columbus the other night really gave the Capitals a thumping. I mean, it was 5-2. They dominated from start to finish, and it was a wake-up call. I mean, at least it should have been, but it's happened twice to the Columbus Blue Jackets in a week, so or 2 weeks. So, yeah, to me, you can't, aside from a couple teams, Pittsburgh, Boston being two in the East, I don't see any other teams that are just jumping at you and saying, you know, I'm the best in this division or this conference. So, yeah, I think a lot of teams are going to be there at the end. And to me, it doesn't seem like it's not as exciting. Like, yeah, every game is tight, but to me, I'd rather see a couple teams at the top or five teams at the top and five teams at the bottom.
I agree.
And see some of these teams be dominant. I mean, look at the Detroit Red Wings. 22 straight years in the playoffs. I mean, you don't see that anymore. Too many teams miss the playoffs. They try to rebuild, and you know they're back where they are. You know, 5 or 6 years later.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. We're talking to Chuck Gormley from CSN Washington about the Washington Capitals. The Jets will be in Washington on Thursday to play the Caps. Chuck, you mentioned players that have had, you know, trade requests, or they've gone to George McPhee with a trade request and they haven't had it come to fruition yet. The name that comes to mind, obviously, is Marty Erat. The Caps paid a hefty price to get him. You know, Philip Forsberg, their first round pick, went back to Nashville in that deal. Erat has yet to score this year. He's got 20 assists in 47 games. No goals, though. You know, how devalued is he on the trade market right now? Can George McPhee, I mean, what's he looking to get for Marty Erat at this point in time, if almost anything?
Well, he can't get what he gave up, and that's an issue anytime a GM makes a trade like that. And, you know, it's easy to beat up on these GMs after they make deals at the deadline because, you know, they're damned if they do and damned if they don't. If he doesn't make a deal at the deadline last year, maybe everyone says, you know, our GM doesn't really care if we win or not. He doesn't want to improve the team when we need it most. And I give McPhee credit for making a bold move. Did it turn out? No. I mean, it was too much to give up for somebody who I think McPhee thought would be a better fit in Washington. But it was pretty clear from the start of this season that there wasn't really a spot for Erat. He's been a right wing his entire career, and Adam Oates does not like left-handed shots on the right side, so he's been forced to play either center, which he's never played, or left wing all season long, and he's never really contributed offensively. Ironically, he's on the top line at practice today and will probably be there tomorrow when the Caps face the Detroit Red Wings. But his value is not high. I think as soon as you make it public that you want out, your value goes down. So it's an interesting thing. I've never covered a team where a guy asked for a trade that early in the season and was still around halfway through the season. And in all likelihood, he could be here all season long. And he's got a deal that pays him through next season. So it's not an easy situation for a GM once a player makes that trade demand.
An interesting situation, Chuck, and we keep talking about the players and what will happen with the roster, but unless I'm wrong, George McPhee's contract is up after this season, and all the players on this roster, almost all of them, have contracts after next season. How is that going to play itself out?
That's another great question. It's one of the intrigues throughout this season. You know, I don't think that, and it's hard to say in management because you never see or hear these contracts being renewed in public. So, my guess is that the owner, Ted Leonsis, is going to wait and see how this team does throughout the next few months and act after this season. And he's a very patient owner, just like there are patient GMs. You know, he has the Wizards here who have lost for years, and their GM has remained the same. So it's a really interesting question. And a lot tells you, you're told a lot about an owner by the way he treats this kind of situation. Do the Caps need to get into the playoffs for George McPhee to be extended? If they miss the playoffs, is that the time to make a culture change? Because Alex Ovechkin has only had one GM since he's been here. What do you do? Is making the playoffs six straight years enough for a GM to hold his job for a seventh year? Do they need to get into the playoffs, or do they not? I mean, it's a lot for management and ownership to decide upon, and I'll tell you, that's a big change. When a team changes its GM, mm-hmm. It could be years before things change, and the Caps are kind of knee-deep in this with Alex Ovechkin. He's in the prime of his career at 28 years old. Do they want to start again, or do they build on what they have? And it's a really tough call, but I'm interested to see how this plays out.
You know, Chuck, you mentioned Alexander Ovechkin. He's got 39 goals. He's easily going to score 50 goals again this year. He's got the Olympics coming up, and I imagine he would love nothing better than to win gold in Mother Russia. You know, we talked about this earlier in the show. Marty Brodeur said that he's willing to accept a trade. Is it ridiculous to suggest that it's possible that Alexander Ovechkin gets traded?
I think that's ridiculous to suggest, only because he has meant everything to Washington and hockey, and I don't think ownership here would ever trade Alex Ovechkin. I mean, unless he's at the end of his career. I think he's in for the long haul. I don't think Alex is unhappy in Washington. I actually think he enjoys playing here, and he would like to win a Stanley Cup in Washington. Do I think they're closer to that now than they were 3 years ago? Probably not. But I can't see him being traded, and I am interested to see how he does in these Olympics. I mean, he's been so good this season, and he's scoring pretty much a goal a game. And I'm really anxious to see how he does, because he was really hurt badly by the Russians' poor performances in past Olympics. And this is a chance for him to redeem himself in front of his own country. And he's really pumped about this. I've never seen him so excited about an Olympics coming up, and this means a lot to him.
The Olympics, the Jets and the Caps will play on Thursday, and then we'll be able to watch Alex Ovechkin play in the Olympics a couple weeks after that. Chuck Gormley from CSNWashington.com, thanks very much for joining us this afternoon on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Thanks for having me. Anytime, guys.
Take care, Chuck. Thanks very much. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on tsn1290.ca.
One final segment on this Saturday afternoon here on TSN 1290, online at tsn1290.ca. Reminder, Hustler and Lawless, 9 a.m., bright and early tomorrow morning. Myself and Gary will be here, then Rick Ralph and the Don Vito Collision and Glass pregame power hour at 11 a.m., leading to puck drop between the Winnipeg Jets and the Montreal Canadiens, 12 noon tomorrow. A game you can hear live on TSN 1290. The Habs and the Lightning just ended regulation, tied at one goal apiece. They'll be heading into overtime momentarily. In other games this afternoon, a relatively busy afternoon in the NHL, the Boston Bruins did what the Boston Bruins do to the Edmonton Oilers. That's, or really, you can flip it on the other way. The Edmonton Oilers did what they do to when they play better competition. That is, they lose, and they lose badly. Boston 4, Edmonton nothing. It was a 1-0 game. After 40 minutes, the Bruins explode for 3 goals in the third period, and that's a 4-0 victory for them. We mentioned 1-1 in Tampa Bay and Montreal at the end of regulation, and at the end of 1 in Colorado, the Avalanche have put 3 on the board, and they lead the Buffalo Sabres 3-0. Still to come this afternoon, Philadelphia Flyers at the Los Angeles Kings, and then a full slate of action tonight, as you'd expect, on a busy Saturday night in the NHL. Marquee game, in my opinion, is the Chicago Blackhawks in San Jose to play the San Jose Sharks, two of the Western Conference powerhouses playing against one another.
Are you eating dinner on the river tonight?
I am eating dinner on the river tonight.
So, I wonder, do they have TVs in there?
No, but we're going earlier, so we will be...
Hopefully you don't know which chair it is, because I've heard Ezzy's cut a few holes in the ice there.
I was ice fishing.
He was fishing,
actually.
Though, is yeah. what he was. It's like, closed, yeah. sir, get out of the tent. You know, yeah. we're eating here, and you're fishing, dropping a hook, line, and sinker, looking for some cod or something.
Yeah, I'm interested to hear how that is because apparently it's awesome, and the food is great, and it's getting rave reviews.
It's actually
all
interesting because I was talking to Ezzy earlier, and he says, you know, nobody's invited me to eat dinner in the river, so I'm just gonna put water in my bathtub, open the doors, and then when it freezes, I'm just gonna eat dinner like out of my bathtub on the ice.
I'm willing to bet it's not the first time Ezzy's eaten dinner in the shower either, but that's a separate issue altogether for another day and time, I suppose. A couple odds and ends, sort of a modified rapid fire that we can touch on before the end of the show. The Cleveland Browns, the Cleveland Stadium, wants to host a Winter Classic. Obviously, Cleveland doesn't have an NHL team. What are your thoughts on non-NHL cities getting into the rotation to host the outdoor games, the stadium series, the Winter Classics, whatever you want to call them?
Richie and I were talking about this during the break. Like, neutral site games, it sounds like a great idea. And I think you could even throw in Canadian cities such as a Saskatoon or a Halifax as far as cities that could host outdoor games. I think it's safe to say that the outdoor games, they're going to have two to six outdoor games per year. They like this. They're revenue generators. The two games in New York were both sold out. The game at Dodger Stadium was sold out. The game, the Big House, was obviously, there were 100,000 plus people. So I think the days of the outdoor games are here to stay. So why not diversify and start having games in non-NHL cities? I think it's a great idea. As Richie mentioned, it's a way to grow the game, and that's what they're all about.
I totally agree. I mean, it's all about the cash for the NHL. It's all money, money, money. That's why you're seeing six of these games and they're garbage. Like, I mean, a couple of them, the New Year's Day game was a great experience. But if you watch that game, the Islanders Rangers game, oh my God, those games is just terrible. But if you can raise awareness and not just try and make money off, you can raise awareness and make money, which is automatic for them. Then go ahead, go to a city that doesn't get to see the NHL players all the time. As you said, go to Quebec City, go to Halifax, go to Saskatoon. If they have a stadium that's 30,000, go there and. What about the states? Some different cities that don't have NHL. You want to go to Kansas City? Well, let's see if they can support an outdoor game. You mentioned Cleveland. You mentioned Seattle. There's a bunch of options here. But don't have two games at Yankee Stadium in the same week.
Dallas Eakins, the Edmonton Oilers head coach, has taken to announcing his roster changes on Twitter.
Yeah, I actually saw that.
What's wrong with him?
Okay, so that Richie, you answered my question there.
That's the media's job.
Go on.
Why? I mean, why don't you elaborate for the listeners, and then I'll just...
Well, he's, you know, every morning, you know, prior to meeting with the media or whatever, he goes on Twitter, and he's got his own account, and he announces, you know, the roster moves that the team is making that day. You know, such and such player is going to play, such and such player is going to be a healthy scratch, such and such player is
injured. And I'm pretty sure, Drew, sorry to cut you off, I'm pretty sure he's the only coach that's doing that I've seen.
I would think he should spend more time, you know, trying to coach and less time trying to tweet.
It's just weird. The teams are trying to control the message more now, so they'd rather they report it than somebody else, because then the source, they're the source, and people go to the source, and they can monetize that in a way.
This segment is brought to you by the source.
Well, no, but that's...
I know, I'm kidding.
That is how it works. Now, I don't know why the coach is doing it. Just odd. He does things differently, and I understand that you want to be unique, but is he almost trying to be too unique in the way he's doing things? The 6 a.m. practices, I mean, these guys have played for a long time here. The gimmicks have to stop at some point. Are the players okay? Obviously, the players are hearing about this beforehand. If they're not, then just stop the show and turn off their airwaves. But I assume they are. So then the point is, what is the point, really, is what I'm trying to figure out. It's just an odd, don't the reporters ask you? If they don't ask you, don't tell kind of thing? I don't understand.
I don't get the point myself. I mean, I don't understand it either. He just seems to be insist. I mean, I don't know the man, but and I'm just looking at this from an outsider's point of view, and I never said two words to the guy. He strikes me as he's got to be a little bit arrogant, in I think that he thinks he's going to turn the coaching fraternity on its head, and he's going to revolutionize the position.
Yeah, but I don't. That doesn't do anything to revolutionize coaching. And you mentioned, you know, the time that he's spending to tweet. To me, that's the job of a reporter. We have a lot of reporters here. We've done it all ourselves, who go to the practice and report on the line changes. That's not really the function of an NHL coach's Twitter account. An NHL coach's Twitter account is just to be an extension of his personality and tweet personal messages as well as professional messages. But I mean, should reporters not go to the practices now because he's just going to tell you, you know what I mean? Like the function of a coach is not to report on his team. So to me, that's what's a little bit puzzling about it. And to be honest with you, I don't think he continues doing it. I bet he stops doing it. That's my prediction.
Just the whole thing that's going on in Edmonton is odd. What is going on there? It is, you know, you have the whole low issue now, and Aikens comes in, and then you hear speculation 20 games in, and he's on the rocks. You know, now he's obviously still there. They can't keep firing coaches. He talks about the change of coaches affecting the players, but of course he has a vested interest in it not changing, so he's not exactly a impartial observer. There's just an odd – that dressing room I've heard is fractured. I think that there are certain guys who – hang out with each other. Maybe it's not as inclusive as you like other rooms. Every vibe I hear from that organization is not a good one.
Quickly now, previews, predictions on tomorrow's Jets-Habs game.
Well, I think you're getting two teams that are going in the right direction here because the Habs have won two in a row and they're playing a good spirited game against Tampa right now. I see actually this being an overtime game. I'll take the Jets to win. Again, I think they're playing well, 3-2 in overtime.
Well, the Jets have been in 31-goal games this year, which is third most in the NHL, so it's probably not a bad prediction. I'll take the Jets. Sure, let's say this goes to overtime. I'll say 4-3 Jets in overtime, and I like Broncos.
Well, that was going to be my next question. Broncos or the Seahawks tomorrow?
Oh, I hate the Seahawks. I'm a Niners fan, so I'm taking Broncos 24-21. Are we not doing cheers and jeers?
No, we don't have time for it today.
Well, I was going to cheer Robin Regier for playing his 1,000th game in the National Hockey League. It's not easy to play 1,000 games in the NHL, and it's certainly not easy to play 1,000 games when you play the style of play that Robin Regier does.
And Ezzy, you have the Broncos tomorrow as well?
Yep, I'll cheer Richard Sherman. but he's going to lose.
That's it for this Saturday afternoon in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to our guests, Andrew Gross from the Bergen Record in New Jersey and Chuck Gormley from CSNWashington.com. In case you missed any of the program, it will be available for download on iTunes. It'll also be available on TSN1290.ca and on our website, IllegalCurve.com. Big thank you to our sponsors, the Certified General Accountants Association of Manitoba, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, and the Linden Market Dental Center. Big thank you, and you can follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. For producer Tim and producer Remus, for Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Been listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca.